Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Hey everyone, my name is Carlos and I'm the founder and CEO of Product School, and I'm here with a very special guest who's a former Spotify product lead and one of our top instructors here at Product School. Her name is Ania Rubinskaya. Hey Ania.
Hi, so happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us one more time. You've been giving so much back to the community in so many different ways, so I'm excited to talk more about your own personal story, breaking into product, and some of the new projects that you are working on today.
Happy to.
So let's start from the beginning. Tell me a bit more about your own story getting into breaking into product and why.
Yeah, I've gotten to speak about it a little bit in piecemeal, so I'm excited to share the whole story, but it's a lengthy story, so I'll try to shorten it. Basically, I tend to be all over the place. I'm interested in many different things, and that's the way it's been ever since I was young. So I'm going to try to do it in chronological order. Really early on, I thought I wanted to do biomedical engineering. I kind of wanted to be a doctor, but I was too scared to have the responsibility of people's lives in my hands. So I figured, let me go make the tools that doctors will use to save people. That was my logic for getting into biomedical engineering. I started off studying that in university, actually, and I quickly switched to business. Long story short, because I had the opportunity to have a few internships while I was still in grade school, in high school, and early on in college, that kind of shifted my perspective into what I would do kind of day in and day out and what I was good at. I started quickly questioning my abilities as I got into like honors calculus and honors physics classes, whether I could cut it along with like all the super geniuses that were doing biomedical engineering and in those classes. And I really like had this natural instinct in business and strategy and finance and numbers. So that was how I initially entered the world of business. I ended up getting a business degree. And then quickly, I was working at these financial banks where I was working on spreadsheets that fed into spreadsheets that fed into more spreadsheets. And I quickly lost the meaning of what I was doing, right? The why that drove me to biomedical engineering, the why that drove me to do like volunteering and social impact stuff that I had done as a hobby and on the side. I didn't find that in my day-to-day work in finance and in business. So I started searching for a way how I can feel like I'm still helping people and how my day-to-day work has an impact and makes a difference. And I can feel something tangible and gives me job satisfaction. So I ended up switching into nonprofit finance and then eventually into international development and like education and youth development. So it was kind of like it sounds like it was all over the place, but it was this logic journey for me to search for meaning in my work.
And at what point in your career you hear about the term product management?
Much later on. So I was in social impact, nonprofits, and I decided to go to business school. I went to Wharton, and my goal during those 2 years was to explore and be open-minded about a way to combine like this business experience and like knack that I have, that I'm good at business and strategy, but be able to combine it with me wanting to make a difference and social impact. So initially I was searching after business school when I was thinking about what to do and recruiting. I wanted to find what we call a double bottom line role, like a role in a for-profit that felt like sustainable. It was, you know, enterprise and commerce oriented, but also still helping people. I felt like there was a more sustainable way to contribute. So I landed at Microsoft on the education team. That was my initial entry into technology. Until that point, honestly, I had never thought about working in technology before. I didn't have the awareness. Had I known that this existed, I probably would have sought it out sooner. I just didn't have the exposure. And then once I got to the education team at Microsoft, I was more so on the business and like sales marketing side. And I still didn't feel like I was making like a tangible impact. I was still missing something that I can touch, feel, and really feel like I was participating and adding value in the creation of something. At which point I started looking closer at the product groups at Microsoft that were actually building the tools that I was trying to sell and market. And I wanted to switch into the product groups to be closer to the product decisions. I still didn't fully know about product management at that point. I just knew that I wanted to explore being closer to the decisions that were being made about what features were being built, what use cases they were prioritizing. Because when I was focusing on education and I was trying to influence the like Office group or the Windows group at Microsoft that had all these other priorities, education was on the bottom of their list, frankly. So I wanted to get closer to the action. And I ended up finding a role on the Minecraft team. Microsoft had just acquired Mojang, the development studio that created Minecraft, the video game. And that's essentially how I fell in and discovered product management and the fact that I loved it. And this was a great, perfect, dare I say, perfect marriage for me of this like substantial, tangible impact that I was looking for that made me feel like I was really creating something in partnership with others and also contributing positively to the end users.
So, Annie, I think there's so many things that you said that I would love to kind of dissect, right? First of all, you're the first biomedical engineer who I know that became a product leader.
But I never even became a biomedical engineer. So that doesn't count. I like dabbled. I did some research, took some classes, and moved on very quickly.
In a way, that's similar to what a lot of founders or product leaders do, right? It's just, they just learn enough to be dangerous. Like they don't become specialists, but they can have a conversation, and from there, they can decide where to go.
Exactly.
And then you went from there to non-profit. Well, you mentioned finance or then non-profit finance. We met a lot of finance professionals that at some point burned out and decided to move into tech, and product seems to be a good segue for that. But like your story is really incredible. And I think it's important for the audience to recognize that there's no perfect path. And that it's not that you go from school to product. And you might not even know that you want product.
Maybe now people have the advantage of even being able to do that. But it didn't even exist 10 years ago. Who knew?
Definitely. Definitely. There is a little bit more of awareness. But still, there's no such a product management 4-year degree.
And I would still argue, kind of similar to the business school experience, you have a lot more to offer in this kind of multidisciplinary field of product management, the more other experiences that you have, because you draw so much from any other industry, just from working in different industries, working with different people, because so much of it is interpersonal and intuitive. If you go straight into product management, you don't have that like wealth of experience and knowledge to draw from.
I completely agree with you. I believe that you need to be a specialist or at least good to have some experience in something before you can call yourself a manager, even though as a PM, sometimes you are an individual contributor, but still you are talking to so many other people that you can quickly become a bottleneck. So yeah. I like your story of like, okay, finance, nonprofit finance, business school, Microsoft in education, then gaming. And then how does that go? How does someone go from gaming to Spotify?
So as you can tell, I like to try out a lot of random things. Like what I loved about the fact that I was able to get into Minecraft and excel at Minecraft is the fact that they gave me an opportunity and I now know that I was able to do it. And I was not a gamer. I don't play video games in my spare time, dare I admit. So I went there and I was really upfront and honest and transparent about the fact that I feel like I do have a value to add because I can add the other perspective. Minecraft was and is a super popular game. And then a lot of times it's the first game for many different players. So there is value in bringing the other perspective, even though you're not well versed in that industry. So that's how I entered Minecraft. And I realized that I really love trying new things and ramping up on new topics, new industries. So at a point, I wanted to try something new. One, I wanted to relocate from Seattle, too. And I really wanted to try to find an organization, a product to work on with a more established product discipline. Because what happened in Microsoft, or at least on the Minecraft team with video games, it's a little bit more nuanced. The product management discipline isn't as pronounced. So originally, when I got on the Minecraft team, I was technically a business manager. So I was managing the P&L, right? Like doing the forecasting for revenue, closing the financial books, prioritizing and projecting like how much will this feature possibly make us in revenue and like contribute to our bottom line, et cetera, and analyzing the performance. And then I slowly started working closer with the actual engineers and we had like an awesome in-house art team to prioritize what we were actually building and tying it to our business goals, product management-like functions, without really having that discipline distinct. At Microsoft, a lot of the product management is done by program managers or PMMs, product marketing managers. So I wanted to go somewhere where there is like this school of thought for product management specifically, and you do it in this like cohesive multi-cross-functional team and really learn more of the trade essentially. So that's part of what brought me to Spotify and what I was looking for. Try something new, go back home to New York, and find a role that is specifically like a product management discipline role.
And that's exactly the product leaders that we are looking for as instructors at Product School. Really love people who have tried different things in different industries so they can truly resonate with other students' backgrounds, right? There is no just one playbook that we can apply. So when someone talks to you, you can really tell that you can really adjust depending on the industry, the location. You also have a lot of experience traveling around the world. So I would love to explore that as well and see how that shaped your product mindset.
Yeah. And, you know, I posted an article maybe a few weeks ago, I'm not sure, because ever since, especially since I started working with the product school and I like coach and mentor some product managers, I get very similar questions. And it's also the impression that I had when I was coming to Spotify. Okay, like this is a legitimate product discipline organization. They approach it in a very regimented way. There are these frameworks and there's this right way to do it. And there isn't. Even at Spotify, what I discovered is every team was doing their own thing. It's really what fits your team and your use case and your users and just like all the different dynamics that you're working with. There wasn't a specific tool set that we were using that like all product managers at Spotify use. And I think a lot of times, especially when you may discount yourself or you're just entering the space, you think that there is a right answer or right approach, but there really isn't. There's so many different ways to approach it. And there's just lots of different frameworks you can learn and you can teach, but you need to remember to look at your team and the problem and approach it in the right way. Don't take it as like a textbook.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit more about your experience now taking a sabbatical. I think that's fascinating personally, but for a lot of people, because tech can be hard, right? Like from the outside, it looks like everyone wants to be a product leader. Everyone wants to work at Spotify and some of these incredible companies, but at the same time, at some point, you also need to find time to recharge and maybe use it in a productive way. So tell me about that experience.
Yeah, so I left Spotify in the fall, in the fall of last year, and I decided to take some time off. It's something that I had been thinking about for years, frankly. I initially had this fantasy of taking a few months when I decided that I wanted to leave Microsoft, Minecraft, and look for a next role. Ideally, I didn't want to go straight in. I wanted to take a break and really have time to reset. My time at Minecraft was amazing. I got the opportunity to do so many things, so many experiences, learned so much, but I would say at that point, I was halfway burnt out. So I already felt that need to kind of recalibrate and really think more about exactly where I wanted to go next. But the Spotify opportunity came up, and it was really important to start right away. And I just decided like, no, I could do this. I could just power right through. And I had like 2 weeks to move across the country and start in a whole new like high pressured role that was nonstop for another 2 years. So it took me those 2 years at Spotify to get to a place where unfortunately I didn't even feel like it was an option anymore. I felt like I needed the time, or like I couldn't keep going. I couldn't do my teams and the people that I would be working with and the product and the users justice at the place that I was at that point. My hope for everyone, and wanting to talk more about this openly, is that everyone doesn't need to reach the place where stress takes a mental toll on your body and your mind. Like ideally, you can sense it when it's coming so that you can take a break and you have a shorter time to kind of rest and recover and get back to doing what you want to do and doing it in a more efficient and productive way. Because when you wait until you're like really crashing, it takes that much longer to recover. So part of my sabbatical was that recovery time, frankly. And the other part was taking the time to do the thing that I never took time to do in the first place, instead of going from role to role and just kind of like on this trajectory where some of that path is decided for me based on the opportunities that are coming at me, I wanted to really take some more silent time and proactively think about where I wanted to go. Like, what is my vision for my career? What is my vision for how I want to contribute in the world? What are the things that drive me? Because the last time that I took time to really assess that was almost like 7, 10 years ago. And we forget in this busy world where we're, you know, chasing metrics and chasing job opportunities, that we have to revisit that prioritization process for ourselves. So that's also part of what I wanted to do. Take time to think about it, explore, try different things in like a low commitment kind of way to see what I'm gravitating towards and what I wanted to do next longer term.
I think it's so important. First of all, thank you for sharing your experience. I'm part of the problem as well. Talk too much about hard skills and career path and what to go next and product market fit and the metrics. And we forget that person company fit sometimes, and like taking time for us, because a lot of people in a way look up to us internally, right? Like engineers, designers, and you need to be able to perform in order to be a good leader for others. So looking back, what would you say are some of the things that maybe other product leaders were already feeling, oh my God, this is too stressful, they could do to kind of keep balance and still be able to be a good leader for this team, but not burned out?
It's tough because I realized, like what you were saying, I fell into some of those traps as well. I think as leaders and as product managers, the best thing that we could do is set the tone and that culture for the team. And if you're anxious and you're stressed out, that's going to reflect in the rest of your team and the rest of your work. So remembering to take the time out yourself, like the best, I think the most powerful thing you could do is set the example, lead by example. It's not enough to just say it, because, you know, at Spotify, for example, we had like a meditation room. So you can theoretically take the time out every single day to go reset yourself, take the time to meditate, calm down. But do you know that in a busy day where it's packed with meetings, if you don't schedule that time for yourself and tell your team, no, I am taking this time for myself, which means that it's okay for you to take that time for yourself as well. You have to model the behavior, or better yet, even make it a team activity. Book a meeting where that meeting is going to eat lunch and unplugging from work. Book a meeting where that time is to meditate together, to exercise together, to have these other bonding experiences that are stress relievers, frankly. One of my most favorite team activities that we did to do team bonding at Spotify was we went to, I guess it was like a quasi meditation studio. It was literally like we went after work and it was like an hour where we basically took the most amazing nap of our lives that was like through meditation and guided music. It made a world of difference. I still remember that to this day.
That sounds amazing. So I'm not just thinking in this new environment where most of us are working remotely and across different time zones, that can be even more important than ever to create some boundaries. Otherwise, like next time you know, you are connecting with so many different continents at the same time, and what is really looking at for you?
And I will be the first to admit that I'm guilty. I remember I came to Spotify and I was still a workaholic. I wonder if I still am. I'm kind of rediscovering myself for the first time again. But I was a workaholic and it was so difficult for me to rest and not feel like I still need to do if there were things on my to-do list. And guess what? That to-do list never ends. There's always something there. But I was guilty of being the one that would send emails to my team at 2 a.m., at 4 a.m., thinking like, no, it's fine. They can reply whenever they want. It doesn't send any kind of message. It's just when I work best. But being more conscious of the fact that you're like pinging someone and you're still sending, they see the time. Maybe not everyone will notice, but there are people that will read between the lines and feel like they need to work harder or feel the urge to reply, because we have this like instant gratification culture. All of the notifications we get on our phones, you know, the unread counts in your emails, those things, even if you really truly don't have an expectation for someone to answer you at 3 a.m. or at 6 a.m. before you get to work, when they see that unread count, it still takes a mental toll. So I think setting those counts of boundaries, not only for yourself, but for everyone else is really important. And it's difficult to do because essentially at some point, you have to tell yourself that it'll be okay, your product will be okay, if you take that break and you take that time, and that you will be more efficient and you will be more productive yourself and with your team if you're healthier, essentially, if you're more well-adjusted, if you take that time to rest.
And I agree. I think the definition of health is changing for good. Now we don't think of health as just physical health. I think mental health is as important, if not more. And we are all being more aware of investing time and money into things that make us happier and better, right? It's not just about learning how to create a pivot table on Excel.
Yes.
So
yeah, and oftentimes the hard skills are the easiest to learn, frankly.
I agree. I think, especially at the beginning, in order to kind of get that first new job, it's important to learn the craft, right? Very tactical. But as you grow in your career and it's more about really interacting with people, there are a lot of skills that personally I wish I had access to earlier in my career. Nobody told me anything about visual communication, empathy, public speaking, right?
Yeah, even just knowing how to facilitate that like culture formation and team bonding with your team is super important. And a lot of times that's the first thing that kind of gets discarded as you get busy, but that's what keeps team cohesion. That's what keeps people focused on your mission. That's what keeps people excited to come to work every day.
So in addition to obviously learning on the go and being exposed to different teams and cultures, is there anything in particular that you did, you've been doing throughout your career that helped you acquire more skills to continue being a good leader for your team?
Such a good question. Honestly, I think one of the best things I did, I mean, at this point, right, like we spoke a little bit about that, I excel at being a generalist product manager, product lead. I feel like I can ramp up on industries quickly, but one of the best things I did for myself to really become more versed in the product discipline and have more to contribute to the rest of my like diverse stakeholders and my team is having the perspective and the experience from so many different industries and different products that I worked on.
And how do you think that we can increase diversity in product? This is a key topic, and I know it's very, very broad, but I think it's very important. Tech still not as diverse as we wish, and obviously there are other fields that are still less diverse, right, such as engineering, but still in product. We're still not at the 50-50, and I'm not just talking about gender diversity. How can we make our products a bit more inclusive?
I think it starts with valuing diverse perspectives. You need to be intentional about where you're reaching out to, about where you're creating awareness, about who you're considering, and about what you find valuable in terms of what people have to contribute. Like I was saying, you know, it's so easy to say like, okay, I work for a video game and I'm hiring a product manager for a video game. So I want someone that has video gaming experience. I want someone that comes from the top school. But each conscious choice you make of who you rule out and who you don't even look at or who you don't consider, that is also like societal implications for who's able to even get to the school, who's able to get to the video game industry. And sometimes if you want to be conscious about really valuing diverse perspectives and opinions and bringing more people and creating an inclusive culture, you need to reach out further. You need to consider areas that maybe perhaps you haven't explored before. I mean, I've heard so many people say when I get into these discussions of like, we can't find diverse talent or it's super difficult to find a qualified diverse candidate. But where are you looking? You're looking at your peers, you're looking at your network and who you know, and oftentimes your peers and your network looks just like you. So if you're looking to find someone different, you have to go to different places.
I agree, and it feels uncomfortable at the beginning and it's extra work, but I think it starts with making that effort and, as you said at the beginning, leading by example. Otherwise, it's just going to be very hard, even harder to change it later. I've seen so many large organizations that now say, well, we have a diversity issue. Let's just hire more people of this type. But in reality, that's just so manufactured that that doesn't really tackle the core issue.
Yeah, because frankly, the way those recruitment practices work is they keep going through the same recruitment cycles and the same sources. They go to the same places to recruit candidates and they're not using different strategies. They're not going to different places.
In product, I have to say there's more. I've seen more people now trying to hire from different professional backgrounds. Back in the day, not so long ago, it was basically you have to be an engineer or maybe an MBA from a top school with experience in Wall Street. That's pretty much it. now we're seeing that there are more designers, even attorneys. Like, it just doesn't really matter, right? It's more about what experience you bring to the table and what you're able to build. And I think it's hard to showcase all of that in a resume or in a LinkedIn profile. So I wonder what other artifacts we can use for recruiters to understand people's background before disqualifying them just because they don't have the right logo on their resume.
Well, really quickly, before I answer your question, I do want to say, like, that was back in the day, but it's still a problem. What you described, the top business schools and engineers, that still happens at a lot of the top tech companies, and it's still something that we need to make progress on. I want to acknowledge that. But one of the good practices I've seen in terms of trying to democratize that a little bit, and if you are looking at someone that isn't from the places you're usually used to evaluating to know that it's a quality candidate, is giving them more of a chance to perform. So it's giving them a problem statement, seeing how they actually apply the product development process, letting them do a presentation on their ideas and pitch you on a feature on how they would make a decision to optimize something or improve an existing product problem. And that hopefully creates a little bit more objectivity in the whole process, right? Because you're really giving people an experiential way to showcase what they have to add in their diverse perspective.
Yeah, and I'm glad that now this technology that allows that in an easier way. Like back in the day, if you wanted to use data, you had to be a SQL wizard, right? Or an Excel wizard. Now you can really use a visual tool to focus more on deciding what you want to showcase and then present it and then showcase. Like, it still is hard, right? Because you still need to learn how to use certain tools. But at least I've seen more PMs that can be a little more self-sufficient. And they can't use the excuse of, I don't know how to design or I don't know how to code in order to build something.
For sure. And I mean, there's a baseline, right? Especially if you're looking to enter into your first product management role and you're mindful of what type of position or what type of company you're applying to, if they value generalist PMs, if they value strategy, you don't even necessarily need to worry about all the bells and whistles, but literally display what you know, show that you know the product development process, show that you're familiar about the different methodologies, because you might not have it on your resume, you might not have it from your past experience, and you may not have studied it, but that's your chance to show that you are familiar with the process.
So, In order to wrap up this interview, I want to get your thoughts on your future and in general, the future for product. So first of all, what are you curious about learning these days?
I am currently participating in an entrepreneurship program. So this is literally a perfect question for me. One of the things that I've been really curious to dive more into and explore, we were talking about it, is mental health. I'm really interested in learning more about how we can apply behavioral science and neuroscience to the way that we're designing products for good. So, you know, we have all of these addictive apps, and so much of my role in the consumer products that I was working on is how can we get people to spend more time, make it more addictive, make them open the app more often and spend more time there. But if we take those approaches and what we know about the human mind and how much people are struggling in terms of mental health now and just wellness and being more well-adjusted and the grander scheme of how people should live their lives and not be so overly stimulated by technology, I'm curious about what that can look like in a digital experience, or at least in a complementary experience that facilitates more mindfulness, facilitates more relaxation, more peace, like de-stressing and anti-anxiety.
As beautifully said, very necessary. So what do you think what does the future of product management hold for some of the people who are thinking, maybe I lost my job or maybe I want to get into this field? Like, is this a fad or what's your take on that?
I hope it's not a fad. I think it's here to stay. And if we think about like even just the future of work and the potential for ML and AI and automation and all the basic, like, let's say, low-level tasks to be taken over by, this is like futuristic, by the power of computing and being able to automate some of those processes, the part of product management that I do think can't be replaced is this human element, is the intuition, is the strategy, is the user empathy. that stuff will be very difficult to replicate. So I see this future where some of the technical tasks will hopefully be done by computing, but product managers will be more empowered and will be freed up to do like that human value add that really defines the role. Because I think everyone can be, well, I think it's much easier to be a great product manager, right? You can do all the coordination, you can schedule all the meetings, you can, you know, follow and make sure all the work gets done. You can crunch the numbers, and perhaps, you know, there will be applications that can do that for you in the future. But how do you know that you're prioritizing the right thing? How are you inspiring people? Are you setting the product vision? Are you really marrying your goals to what the users need, to what you see as the future potential and opportunity in the space? Those things are really where I see product managers as giving the value add in the future.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It's great. It's been great to learn from you and share this time. Annie, I wish you all the best. Let's keep building cool products.
Thanks. Talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.